the Ozarks, back on the farm.
Well, come on in and set a spell, won't you, friends and neighbors? Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and the other in Ozark folklore and traditions, and just generally speaking to sort of help brighten up your Saturday. Mae comes up and the sun comes out. Good morning, Mae.
Thank you, Fred. How do you like the weather? Fine, isn't it, Fred? Good spring. And good morning, friends. The top of the morning to you. I do believe we're going to have spring. Why is it that each spring it seems that it's longer and slower getting here? Maybe it's because we get older and it just seems that way. But there's a thrill and a throb in the blood-red rose when its velvety charm enfolds you. But out in the lanes under warm, splashing rains, it's the scent of the soil that holds you. After the toil and the sweat and the moil and the worries of life that fret you from the pace that kills, just a hike in the hills and the smell of the good earth gets you. That's the truth. I don't get to smell the good earth very much, though. One time a woman wrote to me and signed herself a tired businesswoman in Arkansas. And she wrote this. Why can't we, dear God, in this great world of splendor, be allowed 1 hour a day to commune in heartfelt candor with thy great handiwork, and not always be cramped with man-made scenery? Please, dear Lord, let me have just a tin Lizzie, though it might be wheezy, so I can get out into the great outdoors. Well, the dear woman, I guess, felt like she was the forgotten woman. You remember about 20 years or so ago, all you could hear about was the forgotten man. They had that quite a fad. I never did quite learn who this forgotten man was. Maybe I'm the forgotten woman. They forgot to make me rich, beautiful, and smart. They forgot to take me around the world, and I've always wanted to go. They forgot to take me to strange islands of the sea, where tropical moons shine down on blue-green waters. I have nothing to breathe but good Ozark air. Ain't it awful, Fred? Ain't it awful? Nothing to eat but food. Nothing to listen to but music and warm rains and soft winds and a baby's laugh and a wild bird's song. I have nobody to love but friends and children and loved ones. I have nothing to read but good books. Nothing to thank God for but an unusually strong body for my years and all my life the energy of a sawmill I've had. I have nothing to sleep on but a good bed and nothing to walk on but the good earth. So when it comes to the forgotten man or the forgotten woman, I'm one of them. No, I'll tell you, in our great and blessed America, there really isn't any such animal as the forgotten man or the forgotten woman. I have some friends in the studio this morning. My friends are always, they won't talk on the radio. I have Mrs. Robert Stevens, she's from Chicago, the big city, and Miss Alberta McCann from Norman, Oklahoma. Either one of you gals want to say hello? Well, they wouldn't hear. They wouldn't hear Miss Stevens. You don't want to. They're friends of Henry and Anita. Henry and Anita are here with them. McCann. Henry and I always say, and his lovely wife, Anita. And I mean every word of it. Look at her. She's slapping at me, but don't do any good. We're going to go out and have a pancake breakfast after this. Don't you wish she was going along? Well, the other day I was just thinking about some of the old ways which women had to put up with in their work years ago. My, how women have been emancipated. I thought of those big old irons they ironed with. My own mother did. Heavy. Oh, those old sad irons. Smoke-besearched sad irons. And I remembered how my mother used to iron my father's white shirts. Stiff bosom shirts, you know. All the way down. You remember them, of course. They wear them now only for dress shirts on big occasions. But my father wore them every day of his life, and my mother ironed them. He was a victim of white stiff bosom shirts. I can't remember him in anything else. Every day and always. Then I thought of some of the things that Sam Leith down at Eureka Springs, Arkansas, our Sam down there, you know. Sam's a great chap. He once wrote out for me. He got to thinking about the same things. And I ran across, again, the other day, what he wrote after these several years. Sam was just reminiscing, too, like I am. He said, yes, we went from tallow candles to electric lights, from the earliest Bible hand-printed to the electrically operated linotype, from Dutch ovens made onto the fireplace to fine gas and electric ranges, from the old 25-pound cap and ball squirrel rifle to the Brownie machine gun, from flintlock pistols to rapid-fire automatics, from coonskin and bullhide shoes to the finest shoes in the haberdashery windows, from crude pole houses to art tile brick, from punching board floors in the cabins to the beautiful hardwood floors we have, from wooden windows with a piece of greased paper for a window pane, you remember that's what they used to have, greased paper, to fine French glass, from mud chimneys to gas furnaces, from a twisted corn shuck to light your pipe when you never owned or saw a newspaper to light it with, to electric pocket lighters. He said the Indians, when they first saw a pocket lighter, they called it fire in your pocket. From goose quills to lifetime fountain pens, from wooden plows to all steel tractors on farms, from wooden latches where you pull the latch string in at night and out in the daytime, I told you about that last Saturday, to the finest of steel locks and burglar alarms. And one could just go on, never end. You know, the young generation now hasn't the faintest idea what those things of 100 to 150 years ago were. Well, neither do the most of us. And yet, you know, the present generation, we have a wonderful set of young people now in many ways, considering the temptations on every hand. I can never forget my experience during the last war when I was on radio in St. Louis. And I came home every Friday night right here to my home in Springfield and my husband and family, and I went back Sunday night. Those soldiers that were constantly on the long, crowded train, sometimes as many as 22 cars, what a bunch they were, high-spirited and full of courage and full of fun, even though going out to perhaps to death, kidding each other and everyone else and taking it with a merry heart, troops and troops, loads of them. The trains were packed. They'd be laying down in the aisles. They'd always find me a seat. And, you know, I was a gray lady during the war and had my Red Cross diploma, and I worked among soldiers in the hospitals out here and at the USO and so much in St. Louis in my spare time. One night on the train coming home, I said to a soldier, "Are you an officer?" Some way I never could straighten out those brass buttons and bars on their coats and so on, but anyway, I thought his buttons and all, he looked like he's an officer. And his buddy said to me, "Him an officer? Why, lady, he's the lowest form of animal life that crawls, known as a buck private." And so they went on teasing and razzing each other, going up and down the aisles, restless, talking to the girls, always there to help me with my grips or jumping to fix the seat for me or hang my coat up. Some of them read magazines now and then. Some sat perched on the back of the car seats telling big, long, windy tales. God bless them. Going into the bloodiest Holocaust of all history. "Maybe I'll come back in one piece. Maybe I won't," they'd say. "You can't dive at once." Fatalists, gamblers with life. They used to tell me goodbye when we got into the station. Often I'd drink a cup of coffee with them, and then I'd take a taxi to my apartment. It was midnight. And they'd say, "Don't worry about me. Who wants to live forever?" Oh, I'll never forget it. And that's the last I would ever see of them. Machine gunners, I remember a whole troop of them. They say a machine gunner can count on his life being 20 minutes long. Well-fed soldiers, well-clothed, well-kept, the finest set on the face of the earth. That was in the last months of 1942. Seems so long ago. Well, I was just going over last night some of the Ozark superstitions, and I gathered during a lifetime and others too. Oh, Otto Rayburn gathered so many. That marvelous writer and magazine editor in Great Ozarkin, as many of you know, Otto Rayburn of Eureka Springs. He died and left us 2 years ago quickly. And we never suffered the loss of a greater Ozarkin than Otto Rayburn. People ask me so often to talk about Ozark superstitions. I don't know why, but they intrigue everyone. In St. Louis, it was the same. They'd never let me quit talking about superstitions. You know, human nature is naturally superstitious. In the old days, superstitions were taken very seriously. They were a sort of childhood of the race. You all know many of them. You must never carry a hoe into the house. That was terrible bad luck. If you stood and twirled a chair on one leg, your father would come home that night mad as a hornet about something. If you dropped the dish rag and failed to throw a few grains of salt over your head immediately, most anything could happen. They broke green gourds over the old dog's head to make him bark up a tree to tree things. Eggs set in the dark of the moon wouldn't hatch, they thought. And so often they wouldn't. You know, I'm a moon believer, thoroughly. The moon controls many things, I think. It controls the tides, controls the mind, often. They used to say the chickens hatched in the month of May wouldn't live, and a bird flying into the house meant a death. A white moth fluttering around you was the same, or a death bell ringing in your ears. Did you ever have that? I have. My mother actually believed in that. It never failed with her. That only happens a few times a year, maybe. That boom! Did you ever have your ear do that way? Well, I have. The falling of a picture on the wall without anyone touching it was a very bad sign for the household. And did you ever hear about telling the bees when any of the family died? That is, they'd go out to the beehives in the yard. The old people have told me about it. They tell me yet. And they'd whisper to the hive of bees that so-and-so had died. There's a poem by the great poet Whittier telling about the bees, because they did that in the New England states 100 years ago. They did it in my hills also. If you didn't tell the bees, often they left the hive forever during a funeral. They usually put black cloth over the hives. Scientists even looked into that and said it was excitement, wagons and horses round in the yard and a lot of people and children. And the bees are very sensitive, and they just left. It often happened. Well, my time is nearly up. Time seems to fly. That's the way it seems to me. I send you my love and all my best wishes. I'm just as full of wishes as a fiddle's full of tunes, as the ocean's full of water and some folks is full of prunes, as a beard is full of whiskers and a bed is full of rest. I'm just a bubbling over to get them off my chest. God love you. I'll see you next Saturday. The Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.